You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Finally, after nearly 14 months of on-again, off-again rumors, as of Monday, August 13th, Carmelo Anthony finally, officially a Houston Rocket, having put pen to paper and now being a member of the Rockets for the 2018-2019 season, as expected, on the one-year veteran minimum salary of $2.4 million. With that, welcome to a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for SportsTalk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Monday afternoon, today's show is going to be all about Melo, because even though we've discussed the rumor really since August, or since July 6th, I should say, that's when Adrian Wojnarowski broke the news that Carmelo and the Thunder would be parting ways, and of course it's an extension of the pursuit of Carmelo the Rockets had last summer when he was seeking a trade out of New York. Couldn't get to the finish line then because of the Knicks' unwillingness to accept the contract of Ryan Anderson to make the math work on Carmelo's existing contract, nearly $30 million per season. However, this summer, with the Thunder agreeing to effectively not buy him out themselves, but a trade and buyout, with Atlanta doing the buying out to reduce their luxury tax concerns, that's what made Carmelo a free agent, and so he was able to sign with the Rockets, and by doing so for the veteran minimum, that saves their MLE mid-level exception over $5 million, although they're using a small portion of it for Isaiah Hartenstein and DeAnthony Melton, two young rookies. That'll save them probably about $4 million in the grand scheme to use for any other free agents or potential buyout candidates if this thing drags into the season, as the expectation seems to be at the moment. Today's show, though, we're going to shelve some of those latter concerns. This is going to be all about Carmelo, and yes, we have discussed his signing for a few weeks now because this has been quite obvious. Shams Charania broke the news last Tuesday that Melo informed the Rockets that he would be signing. It was just a matter of logistics. This past, or I should say about 10 days ago, Carmelo was in South Africa with the NBA's tour for the NBA Africa game. So really, the logistics, the delay since becoming a free agent about 12 days ago now, were just about when Carmelo could get to Houston to physically be in the same room as Daryl Morey and Rockets' legal representation to sign the contract. That happened on Monday. We learned early on from Woj that Melo was in Houston. We saw videos from Mark Berman, not just with Mike D'Antoni, who had some great comments, and we'll touch on those momentarily, about the addition of Melo to the Rockets, but Berman of Fox 26 in Houston also tracked Melo down to Methodist Hospital, where he took his physical, which is just basically a requirement for every new deal the Rockets signed. And since the Rockets at midday made the signing official, it's safe to say that all went well. And again, as I'm recording this Monday evening, Carmelo is officially a member of the Houston Rockets. And I'm sure for some of you that are listening, maybe not our newer listeners, but some of you that have stuck with us here at Locked On Rockets for a while, you're saying, okay, what's the news? Because we've been talking about the cap situation with Carmelo signing for the minimum for some time. We've known Carmelo is going to Houston for what feels like a month plus now. So what's new today other than it becoming officially official, which is always nice to get that out of the way? As of now, there hasn't been a press conference or a conference call. There could be. Maybe it's later today. Maybe it's tomorrow. Maybe it's later in the week. Or for all we know, they could push it closer to training camp. At some point, I do think Melo will open himself up to the media. And so when we have words directly from Melo himself, of course, we'll have more updates here at Locked On Rockets. Today, we didn't hear that much from Melo. And so other than knowing he put pen to paper, there's not that much new. However, the news peg that I took out of this is the interviews that Mike D'Antoni gave to a select few reporters locally, with Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle, Rockets beat writer, and Mark Berman of Fox 26, nationally with Sam Amick of USA Today. But his interviews shed some light on the process that brought Carmelo to Houston, which really got going. Mentioned July 6th was when Woj had the initial report that for luxury tax reasons, Melo and the Thunder would be parting ways. And then at the Las Vegas Summer League the next week, that's when we know that the Rockets allowed Melo to meet with other teams, most notably the Rockets and the Miami Heat, to talk about those situations and to facilitate an exit. Of course, because whether Melo was bought out by the Thunder or eventually Atlanta as part of the trade and buyout, whatever he got from his new team was taken away from the amount that the existing team, meaning Atlanta in this case, was going to have to pay. So that's why Oklahoma City, even though Carmelo was property of the Thunder at the time, allowed him to meet with other teams because it would help facilitate the buyout, expedite the process. And according to the report, which you can, again, find on the timelines of Jonathan Fagan, Mark Berman, you can also go to usatoday.com and read the article from Sam Amick. But the Rockets had a lot of long talks with Carmelo, not just financially, because I think with him being bought out, it was pretty clear, be it the MLE or the minimum, he was going to be playing for a pretty small salary in terms of what the Rockets directly pay, but about his fit. And so everything that's been thrown out there, the narratives about, well, will Carmelo come off the bench? Will he be happy as a third option? Will he be happy taking less shots than he has for most of his career? And the quotes, which I encourage you to read off of those Twitter timelines or at USA Today, are extremely encouraging to me because it indicates that the Rockets and Melo had lots of long talks. They discussed his role. And yes, he even expressed a willingness to come off the bench. I'm not saying he wants to. He's open to starting as well, but he's open to whatever the Rockets think is best for the team. One of the quotes that stood out to me, D'Antoni said that Carmelo expressed a willingness to be the, quote, glue guy, which is a huge change from some of the quotes we saw as recently as the start of Media Day last year in Oklahoma City when someone asked him about coming off a bench, and he shrugged it off laughing. Who, me? I'm sure you've seen that gif on Twitter quite a few dozen times over the course of this season. And then as recently as even his exit interview comments in Oklahoma City when he seemed very disapproving of the role that he was in Oklahoma City and whether or not him accepting a lesser one was something that needed to happen. A lot of us deduced for a while that it could be different in Houston, most notably because Carmelo is a free agent. If he wasn't happy with it, he didn't have to sign here. He could go somewhere else. The Heat were an option staring him right in the face where he could have gotten a lot more shots, a lot more nightlife in terms of activities off the basketball floor. If it was going to be Houston, it was going to be about winning. So if he chose to sign here, which has obviously been, we've been heading down this path for a while now, then the obvious deduction is that he's interested in sacrificing more than some of the national narratives have made it seem. But today's the first day we had comments from Mike D'Antoni. Because before this, I don't know if the Rockets could necessarily talk as directly on the record about Carmelo since he wasn't their property, at least not guys like Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni. But now we have it from the horse's mouth that Carmelo is showing a willingness to accept a lesser role. Now, I'm sure some of you that have followed Melo throughout his career might be wondering, why? What's different now? And I think there are a couple of big differences between this coming season, 2018-2019 in Houston, versus 2017-2018 in Oklahoma City. The biggest one is simply timing. Because last offseason, Melo was trying to get to Houston the entire offseason using his no-trade clause as leverage, he did not open up his list to include the Thunder until the last 2 days before training camp opened. And effectively, as I've said a lot, it was like a shotgun wedding. It was put together at the last minute. Neither party was able to put a lot of time and thought into developing a role, how they wanted to make it work. Instead, they were flying by the seat of their pants, and that makes it very difficult to adjust. So in this case, when you're getting this deal done over a month before training camp, both parties understand what they are getting into. It's very different than it was in Oklahoma City, which essentially was not his preferred destination. It was a fallback plan put together at the last minute, and both parties, I think, didn't have nearly the thought and planning going into it as what the Rockets with Mike D'Antoni and Chris Paul are going to have with Carmelo Anthony this summer. The other thing, in a lot of his comments, Mike D'Antoni referenced Team USA. Melo, of course, a three-time Olympic gold medalist. You could argue maybe the greatest Olympic player in the history of United States basketball. And when D'Antoni made that reference, what he's alluding to is a lot of players who are all very good, but some of them make sacrifices, be it less shots, possibly coming off the bench, for the betterment of the team. And of course, Melo has thrived in those settings, oftentimes with Chris Paul and James Harden. And in my opinion, D'Antoni was citing that specifically because, of course, those three players do have some Team USA experience, but it's also a matter of guys who sacrifice for the greater good because they realize that there's such an abundance of talent that some guys are going to do things differently than if they're option one or option two as the focal point, the superstar, which Melo has been for most of his career in Denver or New York. At 34 years old, it's not like that. Melo entering his 16th year in the NBA, it's a continued evolution in terms of what he has left. Clearly, he's not as explosive as he once was. Defense has slipped a little bit more. And so he's got to evolve and play to his strengths. And that allows, that also means allowing the team to play to those strengths in terms of how they use him. And even though Oklahoma City was perceived to be a really good team a year ago, it was perceived in part based on the acquisition of Carmelo Anthony. On the floor, look, it was largely, now they did acquire Paul George for Victor Oladipo, although Oladipo ended up being a lot better than most people thought, but effectively the Thunder were running it back with Carmelo and Paul George added to a roster that won 47 games and was easily dispatched in a five-game gentleman's sweep in the first round of the playoffs a season ago against the Rockets. It was not a team that had that much pedigree. In this case, the Rockets won 65 games, by far the most in the NBA, and had the Warriors, probably the most talented team ever assembled, on the ropes, up 3-2, pushed to the brink before Chris Paul's ill-timed hamstring injury, of course. That can have a certain humbling effect to it, in my opinion, if you're Melo going into that situation, that joining a 47-win Thunder team, it's not necessarily the same thing, especially when one of the only reasons to expect the Thunder to be much better than that 47-win group they were 2 years ago was because of the acquisition of Carmelo Anthony. In this case, I think it's much more analogous to joining a Team USA-type environment. And beyond just the fact that the team is better, look at Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon would start for 90% of the teams in the NBA. He might even start for the Rockets. We still haven't decided who the starter at small forward could be. If Melo comes off the bench, which isn't a given, it could be James Ennis. They could also go with a three-guard lineup with Eric Gordon there. Or, of course, it could be someone they sign or trade for later this offseason. Stay tuned. More on that in the next couple of segments of this show. But the presence of Eric Gordon, a guy who's not even 30 years old, a dynamic scorer, good enough to start for 90% of the NBA teams, and clearly was often a finisher against the Warriors of all teams in the playoffs. The fact that the guy that good has found success coming off the bench with the Rockets, that the team is succeeding, to me, if you're a guy like Carmelo Anthony, that makes it all the easier to buy into that role if that's what the Rockets decide is best for you. Because, yeah, Carmelo Anthony is a great player. He's got a lot of pedigree. He's got a lot of history. Well, Eric Gordon's a really, really good player, too. And I think players around the league, starting with Melo, respect him. There's a reason Eric Gordon was in that Team USA camp a week or so ago with some of the best names in the game. Eric Gordon is really good. And yet, on a team as great as the Rockets, it makes sense for him to come off the bench. The Rockets have succeeded with that dynamic. If that's worked for Eric Gordon and the Rockets, why couldn't it work for Carmelo and the Rockets? To me, between the success of the Rockets as a team compared to the Thunder a year ago, the presence of Eric Gordon, a similarly dynamic scorer who has accepted this role and thrived in it, maybe also a slight humbling effect from things not going according to plan in Oklahoma City, to me, it's the combination of those three things that has Melo more open to accepting a bench role, according to these reports from Jonathan Fagan, Mark Berman, Sam Amick of USA Today, or Amick, I believe, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN in his initial report, citing sources close to the Rockets, and so on and so forth. It's clear that part of this deal is not guaranteeing Carmelo a starting slot. If he gets it, he's going to have to earn it in training camp. And so to me, that opens up options for Mike D'Antoni. And if you're a fan of the Rockets, that's the best thing you could hope for. You want this thing to get decided by what Mike D'Antoni and the entire Rockets brain trust thinks is best. You don't want there to be artificial constructs in terms of, well, we're having to use Carmelo and by extension certain other guys because of how the pieces fall in the rotation because of this little promise they made to sign him that he would have to be used a certain way. No, according to this, it's going to be up to the Rockets. And maybe Carmelo starts. It's not saying that he won't. There are some legitimate reasons to why he still might fit as a starter. But according to this, the real takeaway, those artificial boundaries are not going to be there. The Rockets are going to be able to determine themselves what is best for them as a basketball team, and they have buy-in from Carmelo Anthony. That doesn't guarantee it's going to work, but it at least gives you a huge first step in the right direction that I don't think was there a season ago for Melo in Oklahoma City. Now, I wanted to lead in our initial segment about just the importance of Melo being open-minded to coming off the bench. I don't think that it's anything that has been decided at this point, but I think just his willingness, his openness to the concept gives the Rockets more options than a lot of folks thought that they might have throughout this process. And so that, of course, in my opinion, should have you more optimistic on the signing, especially given how low risk it is, signing him for just the veteran minimum contract, $2.4 million, on a one-year deal. Again, for a guy at 34 years old who is staring at his basketball mortality, he knows the criticism that's out there. He's looking at his basketball mortality and considering that, for the first time, in my opinion, there's reasons for optimism, especially if you can use him and play to his strengths, which, whether he starts or doesn't, I think we can all agree that having Carmelo Anthony running your offense through him at times, especially in those early second, early fourth quarter minutes that James Harden isn't out there, you can get the best of both worlds. You can run your offense through him on that end, make him happy, get him maximum effectiveness, run it through the elbow at times, in the post, wherever he's comfortable. And also, you mitigate his defensive deficiencies a little bit because you have him going up against second-team players rather than starters. So it's not that you have to bring him off the bench. Theoretically, you could start him and then stagger the minutes, just like they do with Chris Paul to some degree, to where they bring in Chris Paul when James Harden goes out. It's not that he has to come off the bench. You can still start him. But the fact that the Rockets have the option to use him however they see fit, that's going to be the key to maximizing his effectiveness. One of the other things that really jumps out to me about this, if they're open to bringing him off the bench, hasn't been decided, but they're open to doing it, then to me, it should send a pretty clear signal that they are not looking at Carmelo Anthony to replace Trevor Ariza. Because we know the narrative that's been out there. The Rockets lost two defensive-minded wings. Their switching was very important, especially against the Warriors last year. They lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, and the only defensive-minded wing you brought in was James Ennis. Carmelo Anthony, clearly, offense first. Now, you can mount cases that Michael Carter-Williams, who has a lot of length, and De'Anthony Melton, who's a smaller guard, but definitely can help you stop dribble penetration. Maybe one of those guys overachieves expectations and can help. But I think that's not something you want to count on. You take that as a pleasant surprise if someone like that steps up. In terms of proven guys you can count on playing real rotation minutes for a team expected to be the best or second best in the NBA this coming season, competing for a title, James Ennis is the only defensive-minded wing you brought in. Carmelo Anthony might fill some of those minutes because clearly he's a forward, but he's not nearly from the same mold as Trevor Ariza. That said, he should not be looked at, as I've said in the past, as necessarily an Ariza replacement. What I actually think is a more reasonable way to look at it, James Ennis replaces Luke Bamute in terms of defense off the bench, 20 to 25 minutes per game. Carmelo Anthony replaces Ryan Anderson in terms of another largely power forward, but of course with the Rockets having basically point guards, wings, and rim runners in Mike D'Antoni's scheme, there's a little bit more room for interpretation with those positions. It's not as rigid as a lot of teams would be. But effectively having Carmelo as a replacement for Ryan Anderson in terms of a big who can space the floor, give you that gravitational pull, a little bit of height and bulk, but hopefully not be as tentative and as passive as we saw from Ryan Anderson at times this past year. And then when it comes to replacing Trevor Ariza, that piece may or may not be here yet. Maybe you have a D'Anthony Melton or Michael Carter-Williams unexpectedly step up. But it doesn't have to be that. You also could trade Ryan Anderson. We've talked about that possibility extensively with his $20 million deal that can match salaries for a lot of pieces around the NBA. You might have to accept an overpaid contract somewhere else, but those exist. Guys like Kent Bazemore, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, Courtney Lee, whoever it may be, at the wing spots. A similarly overpaid deal, but someone who gives you a better position fit than what you have with Ryan Anderson at the moment, especially Ryan Anderson now that the Rockets have Carmelo Anthony. So in my opinion, no, Carmelo Anthony is not replacing Trevor Ariza. I think you could say Ennis replaces Bamute, Carmelo replaces and probably upgrades Ryan Anderson. And as far as who replaces Ariza, maybe you get lucky with unexpected development from one of your young guys, but more reasonably, that's still to come, be it a Ryan trade or using the majority of your mid-level exception, which, as stated earlier, you were able to save for a buyout candidate during the year. Don't know exactly who that's going to be, but there are a lot of quality 3-and-D type wings, Damari Carroll, even Trevor Ariza, that are on expiring deals wherever they are. You can throw Jared Dudley into the mix. And so all of those guys, expiring contracts, especially if their teams are going south and they're prioritizing cap room in the summer, those could all be, under the right circumstances, buyout candidates. And the Rockets, obviously, not just as a contender with potentially a need for their services, but also a financial leg up due to preserving most of the mid-level exception, you'd have to think the Rockets would be at the front of the line if one of those guys shakes free. So it doesn't have to be before the season. It could be during the season as well, although certainly I think they would prefer it to be before. My guess is the next 4 to 6 weeks, they will still continue to kick the tires on Ryan Anderson trades because they could do it sooner rather than later. Then you get that new player into the fold for training camp, and you could theoretically have them for all 82 games, which is important if you want to make a run at the one seed again, which, as Daryl Morey has stated, is important to taking down the Warriors. You've got to chip away at the margins wherever you can, and against a team that good, getting a Game 5 and a Game 7 in your gym, that's a big deal. All that said, there's been a certain segment of Rockets, and especially NBA Twitter, who's seen that, look, you lost two forwards in Ariza and Bamute, and now you're adding two forwards in Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, and just looking at it as a two-for-two swap, and here are the strengths and weaknesses, and when it comes to defense, if you're looking at it just through that limited prism, then yeah, you could see problems in terms of how do the Rockets maintain the defense that took them from the 55-win team they were 2 years ago to a top-five defensive team and a 65-win juggernaut that had the Warriors all but beaten this past year. Those concerns are completely valid. And so with the Rockets showing a willingness to bring Melo off the bench, to me that's a pretty clear signal that this is not a finished product. This roster still has more pieces to be added to it. And by the way, I think it's also important to note that your roster that starts on day one of the season is not necessarily what it's going to be at the end of the year. This past year, we think of P.J. Tucker as a fixture at the starting four spot. Ryan Anderson actually started more games at power forward for the Rockets this past year than P.J. Tucker. They didn't make the full-time switch to P.J. until mid to late February. And yet by the playoffs, Ryan had fallen out of the rotation altogether, and it felt like P.J. was a fixture for 35 minutes a night with regularity. No, the Rockets actually started Ryan for more games, and they had a really good winning percentage in those games that Ryan started, as evidenced by the fact they were 65-17. They didn't lose very many games, period, no matter who started. So it's very conceivable that maybe Melo is a day one starter, and then he's not by the end of the year. What you start the year with is not necessarily what you are going to finish with. Some of it based on evolving needs as the season moves along. Some of it based on roster composition. Maybe the timing isn't right to make a Ryan Anderson trade now. Maybe it happens closer to the deadline when he has less of a financial commitment and is closer to being an expiring contract, which is when the negative value of him being overpaid starts to dwindle and come closer to neutral or maybe even slightly positive. There are all sorts of reasons, but the biggest takeaway I think you should put from the uncertainty the Rockets are expressing about the usage of Carmelo Anthony Beek starting or off the bench, they're not looking at this as a finished product. It's not, we lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, we replaced Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, we're good, this is how it's going to be. No, it's an evolving process, as often happens over 82 games. It's a marathon, not a sprint. There are lots of different combinations. But I think the Rockets talking to Melo about this bench role, going through these detailed discussions with him, which to me is the biggest takeaway from today, these interviews that Mike D'Antoni had with a select few members of the media, it shows you that no matter what happens in terms of day one, the Rockets aren't considering this a finished product. They have a lot of work still to do. It might be done by training camp. It might be later than that. But in my opinion, it's not as simple as saying, well, Carmelo Anthony's the Ariza replacement and judging accordingly. No, Carmelo Anthony is one piece of a larger puzzle. And especially for the investment cost and the willingness to come off the bench, it's a piece that, in my opinion, has very little risk and a lot of upside. Again, a 10-time All-Star, former scoring champion, certain first ballot Hall of Famer, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. To me, it's a pretty fun day to be a Rockets fan, and I can't wait until training camp gets here in late September to watch this start coming together on the basketball floor. All that said, I'm not oblivious to the questions. Certainly, defense is not going to be a strong suit for Melo, although the numbers actually show that when he switches, which is what the Rockets do a lot under Jeff Bezdelic, he's closer to mediocre than he is bad, so you can actually play to his strengths a little bit in terms of how the Rockets do it. I think also the Rockets playing at a slower pace since February. They were one of the slowest paced teams in the league last year. I think that's to his advantage. Mentioned on one of last week's shows how the numbers showed that Melo was significantly better when he was fresher early in the season. In addition to playing him lower minutes per game, maybe in the mid to upper 20s rather than the 32 per game he played in Oklahoma City, I think also playing at a slower pace as opposed to the breakneck style that often happens under Russell Westbrook could be keeping Melo fresher longer into the season. So the peak efficiency we saw from him in October and November hopefully lasts throughout the year and doesn't end up fading as we move along. That said, even offensively, there are questions. Defensively, it goes without saying, and offensively, you know, he can talk a big game. You still haven't heard from him yet. I do anticipate it at some point in the coming days or weeks, but he can say all these things, but showing it and doing it on the basketball floor is something else. Until he does it, there are going to be questions. It's fair to also point out that, look, D'Antoni and Melo did not mesh that well 6+ years ago in New York either. So there's still a lot to prove no matter what gets said. Talking is one thing, action is another. So while I'm personally optimistic about it, you shouldn't dismiss those that are more skeptical. There are valid reasons for it. That said, there's one particular line of questioning that, while important, I think is being overdone, and that's the what about the Warriors angle? And again, it is important. I understand why. Because the Rockets, from a talent perspective, look, they're going to be the best or second best team in the NBA. To me, it's pretty obvious, no matter what some of the national over-under numbers might be. The Rockets were the best team in the NBA in the regular season a year ago, and well, they were the second best team in the playoffs, but you could argue that they were the best team before they lost Chris Paul. Either way, it's 1A, 1B in terms of the Rockets and the Warriors the majority of last season. Now, there have been a few changes, as we've discussed in this episode and throughout the offseason here at Locked On Rockets, that might tweak that a little bit, but I don't think anything substantial. Whether they're the best or the second best, the Rockets are going to be right up there, and they're aiming to take down the Warriors and finish the job that they couldn't do a year ago. So no matter what the final win total is for the Rockets, yes, they want to get the one seed again, because that would help in terms of chipping away at the margins, getting you another boost against the Warriors in the playoffs. But it's not so much about the regular season, because the Rockets are going to be fine, barring major injuries, in that regard. Everything for the Rockets is about that seven-game series against Golden State, probably in the Western Conference Finals again, and finishing the job a year from now in a way that you couldn't a couple of months ago. And there are questions about if the Warriors go small, if they go to that death lineup, who does Melo guard? Now, just from an X's and O's perspective, again, I think some of that is overdone because Carmelo is not as bad against switches, or when he switches, I should say, as he's made out to be. A lot of his bad defense is one-on-one, but when you switch him the way... a lot of his bad defense is not one-on-one. A lot of his bad defense is through the team concept, not wanting to fight through the screens, so on and so forth. In terms of one-on-one, moving his feet, being willing to switch, and that's what kind of takes over these Warriors-Rockets matchups, he's actually held his own, the data shows, a little bit better than you might think. You could also note that the Warriors, if Boogie Cousins plays out as well as some in the national media think he will, they might be playing more traditional sets and less of the Hamptons five, or whatever you want to call it, with Draymond Green at the five, and then the core four of Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson, and Andre Iguodala. That said, even with those caveats, I'll acknowledge there's not anyone other than Iguodala for stretches that you can really feel that comfortable about Carmelo guarding on the Golden State Warriors. Again, it's a valid concern. I'm not oblivious to it. However, if you look at how the Rockets-Warriors matchups on the floor went last year, and perhaps it's the switching style that mitigates it to some degree, it didn't always play out on the floor the way it would seem to on paper. And I've seen a lot of comparisons, Carmelo to Rhino, which is what I've done, you know, earlier in this podcast, mentioned that Carmelo is more of a Ryan Anderson replacement slash upgrade than he is a Trevor Ariza replacement. And I've seen some nationally saying, well, Ryan Anderson wasn't really playable against Golden State, and that means Carmelo won't be either. I don't necessarily agree with that. First off, the regular season, the Rockets went 2-1 against the Warriors. In the two Rockets wins against Golden State in the regular season, Ryan Anderson played 30 and 33 minutes. That's significant. Then in Game 7, and of course the Rockets were somewhat looking for lightning in a bottle with the injury to Chris Paul, but even after not really playing most of the series, Mike D'Antoni threw Ryan Anderson out there. And in the first half, at least, he held his own. Now, eventually in the second half, Steph Curry cooked him to some degree, and you can wonder if maybe the Rockets should have pulled Ryan earlier and quicker than they did. But by and large, the games in which Ryan Anderson played major minutes against the Warriors, he was not a huge liability. The Rockets were competitive in those minutes. What ended up kicking Ryan Anderson out of the Rockets' rotation was not his defense against the Warriors. It was his tentativeness. It was his lack of comfort, lack of rhythm. In short, how passive he was on offense. He was passing up open shots. And we heard Mike D'Antoni allude to this plenty. In a Mike D'Antoni scheme, you have to shoot, shoot, and shoot again. That's why Gerald Green fits so well. He's never shy. Even if he's missed five or six, he's going to keep shooting and trust the sample size will even out. The next one will go in. When Ryan fell out of rhythm, he passed up open shots, and that makes the offense sticky. If he's passing up open shots, then all of a sudden he's not getting the gravitational pull because the defense doesn't have to respect him shooting from a certain spot on the floor, and then everything mucks up. Newsflash on Carmelo Anthony. You can say a lot of things about him, but he's not shy. He is going to pull the trigger. He is going to trust that his shots will go in the bucket. That's not to say he's going to be an impact player, especially defensively against the Warriors. I'm not saying the concerns are unfounded. What I am saying is that if Carmelo takes and makes his shots offensively, we saw enough from how the Rockets used Ryan Anderson against the Warriors to see that in terms of staggering the minutes, the lineups, they could find ways to put him out there without being a major liability. Now, it might take a little bit of buy-in from Melo's part to be managed and to be inserted into the appropriate points of the game to maximize that, but that's what goes back to the initial comments from Mike D'Antoni today. If he's willing to do that, then that's going to make everything else all the easier. Does that mean Carmelo is going to be dynamic against the Warriors? No, there's a lot that remains to be proven. But if he's willing to accept the right role between that, the fact that his history, at least as a switching defender, is not as bad as the reputation would lead you to believe, and the success the Rockets had with Ryan Anderson against those same Warriors, to me, that gives me hope. I don't know if he can be a star, but that he can be at least a serviceable player for the Rockets against Golden State. I mean, you combine that with James Harden and hopefully a healthy Chris Paul, that gives you a very real chance to finish the job in 2019 in a way that you weren't able to in 2018. So with that, we can wrap up today's All Carmelo episode of Locked on Rockets. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. If you want more content in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, simply my name. The show is on there at Locked on Rockets. Also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website at lockedonrockets.com. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, don't hesitate to let us know. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, etc., etc., please do so. That's how you'll get breaking news alerts when there's a new episode. And if you'd also be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can make the business model work here at Locked on Rockets by looking attractive to potential advertisers and keep this thing going as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you haven't already listened to Locked on Texans, that's our sister show covering the Houston Texans across town, please do. The Texans are in full swing, preseason underway, regular season less than a month away now. So if you haven't already subscribed or listened to them, hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson, please do. If you want any other teams around the NBA, their reactions to the Melo news, or anything else going on around the association, we've got experts across this great Locked on network in the NBA, the NFL, and now even expanding into Major League Baseball and college sports. So for today, that will do it. We may have more content very soon if we hear from Melo. Again, as I'm recording this Monday evening, we have not had an official availability or plans for a press conference or conference call release just yet. But as soon as I find those out, if that does happen, I'll let you know on Twitter. And then, of course, we'll have another episode right here at Locked on Rockets to break everything down. For now, though, I think it's safe to say that most fans in Houston are having a good start to the week with the news of the Carmelo Anthony acquisition after almost 14 months of waiting, now finally official. So with that, enjoy the rest of your Monday, and stay tuned for more coverage throughout the week and year right here at Locked on Rockets, your home for podcast discussion and analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball.